So we are going to work onder hardkoppies, maar please, let, let we work together, just tell us on which page you are, because sometimes it's a problem, then you have to face around to follow the presentation. Thank you very much. Over to you. I don't, if you want to say some in your doctorate remarks, you will.
Thanks, Honorable Madam Ellenson. Also, again, I want to thank everybody for the invitation we have sent to USASA, for USASA to come here and give a presentation in terms of what USASA is, briefly, and what USASA has done to date. The presentation is going to be very brief because we suppose that people have gotten the presentations in advance. And I'm sure people have gone through them, and therefore they've got questions as well that they'll follow through. Just very briefly, I mean, everybody knows the institution in terms of where it comes from legislation, ICT legislation, from the mandate itself that is very clear there, which is that, you know, promotion of access of information and to disadvantage areas in particular as far as ICT. And USASA is evolved over years, and I'm sure everybody is aware of the evolution that the convention has took from where it was before, which was around telecenters, which were actually deployed across the country, and until there was a stage where those were handed over to the municipalities. Because USASA couldn't in perpetuity support those. So they handed over the municipalities of different areas for them to carry on with servicing of those. And over years, and because also of the evolution of technology, and USASA had to be up to speed, and right now, I mean, the focus area is around broadband connectivity and VDM, DTH and DTT. So that's our areas. And as everybody knows there, we were linked with the National Development Plan in terms of our achievement as far as those areas are concerned. And with specific targets that, for instance, by 2020, we're supposed to have had 100% connectivity across the country. And the same with the DTH and the DTP. DTH and DTT as far as the rollout to the disadvantaged areas to the tune of 5.2 million inhabitants of those areas. That project, as you know, is underway, and I'm happy also to say, I mean, after some of us have listened to what the minister was saying yesterday, that one of the blockers, one of the issues that was a challenge for us was the issue of TV licenses, and which was mandatory, but that has been unlocked. So then which says those sort of areas, then, you know, this thing is going to be done expeditiously. So we're seeing the process going as quick as possible. And the second issue which we're going to unlock is very positive in terms of the discussions we had last week, is with SA Post Office around the housing of our units and migration of those to the centers. We had a particular problem, logistic problem with Post Office in terms of the contract, and you know, we had active people for quite a long time until this new person, the CEO there, Mark Burns, who's now on board. And with him on board, we were seeing a situation where we'll just finalize the contract so that the Post Office becomes our partners in terms of sort of distribution of the central box to the respective areas. We're also getting very innovative in terms of speeding up the distribution, and therefore we're going to be making use of people in respective areas. We use them as distributors as well to assist the Post Office. So with that in sort of in summary, you know, the future looks very rosy. Obviously, we will still have a hurdle, which the minister spoke about yesterday, but also that hurdle, we don't see it as a big hurdle, is the issue of the forensic investigation, which was commissioned by the DOC department together with Treasury. And the minister spoke about it last week in terms of where it is and what's going to happen with it as far as the outcomes coming out public and the specific actions in terms of what's going to happen with that. So really, I mean, the agency look at good footing, but however, still there's things still going forward that we need to actually explore. One of the very important things which I must say is for us, Madam Principal, I can't emphasize how much this meeting is so important, how important this meeting is in the sense that when rollout and VDM takes place at the coalface level, and the coalface is the provinces. So provinces are key in terms of getting the target accomplished, and how nice it is for them to be here, for us to discuss issues of collaboration. You know, I believe each province has budgets as well. They've got budgets for broadband, and they've got budget around how they digitize schools. And you guys are sitting at the center as a champion of this, with thought leadership and with best practices that can be deployed all over the country. We need to find a way of collaborating, working together. We synergize resources with the provinces, and with your help, Madam Minister, we need to come to the extent of, even to the extent of having MOUs with the provinces. And we set up committees at provincial levels, and we bring all the stakeholders together, the telcos, who we use, we subsidize them when you do the rollout. Now, we also actually get additional resources, be it other private companies working at those provincial sections, together with the local provincial areas taking lead with your staff. So we're looking at the models that's going to expedite this, because as it stands, if you guys was to do as it has been doing, to go to a province like it is now in terms of the annual plan of this year, going to Eastern Cape, what about the other provinces? So USASA can coordinate a situation where it does Eastern Cape and it does other provinces simultaneously, of course, for the good of the country. Thank you, madam.
Thank you very much. I
think you should have questions. Can we then give over to the department for the presentation? I don't think it will be so long. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will briefly go through the presentation on the USASA and USASA strategic plans and annual performance plans for the 2017 financial year, which is the current year we've just embarked on. On page 2, Chair, it just outlines the contents, so I think I will move on then to the third page, slide number 3. Just to touch briefly on the vision of USASA, everything that is being done by the agency is basically driving towards ensuring that there is universal service and access to all citizens of South Africa, regardless of the corners they may be in the country. In terms of the mission, we are striving to facilitate the rollout of ICT infrastructure to enable that those underserviced areas that have been identified in the country actually do also get access to the required ICT services. And then the second one is to make sure that we do facilitate the ICT service in the underserviced areas and we contribute to the poverty reduction and unemployment in South Africa. Because remember, if we do give them access to communication tools as well as services, they will then also have access to the same opportunities as people that are in extra urban areas. Third one is basically to promote and pursue the goal of universal access and to contribute to the sharing and preservation of information to make sure that South Africa as a whole actually becomes a knowledge society. On the values, still on slide number 3, we drive everything within the agency by making sure that we provide excellent service to all our customers and stakeholders, bearing in mind that our customers are actually the beneficiaries that we intend to serve and we currently serve in the underserved areas of the country. There are high standards of trust in everything that we do within the organization, so integrity is at the core of everything that is being undertaken by the agency. we make sure that each and every employee within the agency is actually accountable and has a sense of ownership towards ensuring that the agency actually achieves what it is supposed to achieve in terms of the mandate of the organization. Creativity is promoted, there is openness in our activities, and most important of all, there is a team spirit that actually exists within the agency from all levels of governance, from board to management, as well as all employees within the agency. Moving on to slide number 4, Chair. This one just touches briefly on the mandate of the organization as well as of the fund, because remember, USASA is basically in existence to make sure that we do administer USAS as a fund. So there we are still looking at driving the whole of universal access. We are supposed to be conducting research and advising the minister on relevant areas relating to underserved areas as well as needy persons. We are supposed to make sure that there are recommendations made to minister on policy matters, and we most importantly manage and administer the USAF, which is the Universal Service and Access Fund. And where appropriate, we are supposed to be providing advice to the regulator, which is ICASA, on universal service and access related matters. The fund is exclusively used for making sure that assistance is being provided to needy persons, to make sure that they are provided with equipment and services. We are utilizing the fund to make sure that we do construct and extend networks in the underserved areas that have been identified. Procurement of electronic communication networks is actually done for educational institutions. And then we also focus on establishing and operating of ICT centers that is according to the mandate. Then at the bottom, we just reflect that all these elements are actually underpinned by the relevant plans and prescripts that are put there, which is the National Development Plan, the PIC, as well as SA Connect. To touch briefly on policy drivers, I'm not going to go into these ones individually, but as an individual area, we are focusing on making sure that we contribute towards the national development goals that have been set in terms of broadband penetration for the country as a whole. There is a new group part that talks to job creation in the ICT center. And then 6.15, the aim there is to make sure that we are driving economic opportunities by making sure that there is access to digital ICTs for all South African citizens. And then in line with the MTSF deliverables, USAF is actually also making sure that there is connectivity to schools, healthcare facilities, as well as other government facilities. Then the last one, which is the SA Connect target, USAF plays a key role in making sure that there is affordable broadband nationally to meet the various public users, both formally and informally. Just to be sure that at the core of everything we do, we also take into consideration the plans of our parent department, which is the DPS. Chair, we've touched on slide number 6. We've touched briefly now on the two key departmental goals that actually are driving what we do as an agency. The first one is basically on making sure that the broadband connectivity that is secure and accessible to all South African citizens and education as well as other government institutions. So in terms of that, there are two goals on the USAF side that talks to making sure that the identified underserved areas are actually connected through available and sustainable quality broadband networks, and also that those solutions that have been offered to these underserved areas actually respond to the needs of the educational sector as well as the primary healthcare sector and other institutions in these underserved areas. In terms of the fourth goal of the department, which is making sure that all entities as well as the department itself are actually functional and are effective in delivering on their mandates, four key goals have been identified from the USASA side. The first one being making sure that we do optimize our organizational efficiency to support project delivery. I've mentioned earlier that USASA is actually an administrator for USAS, which means that if we strengthen our resources, mainly the human capital that exists within USASA, it will enable us to be in a better position to deliver on the mandate of both the agency and the fund. Then talking to that also, we have looked at the second key resource, which is basically our business systems, to make sure that they are actually integrated and they actually do respond to the needs of the agency. So currently there is a process of making sure that through the ERP system, we are actually putting together all our different systems and making sure that they become integrated and they are able to assist us in delivering better. There is also a focus on making sure that we do promote good relationships with all our stakeholders and to ensure that we enhance the USAF and USAF brands. That one is basically also just to make sure that we are also very visible within the communities that we are supposed to be serving, and they are actually aware of what it is that USASA has to offer in terms of making sure that there is indeed access to service. Promotion of legal and regulatory compliance is also another key one. In the 14-15 financial periods, we did manage to make sure that our audit opinions from the Auditor General were unqualified. So the focus now has been on making sure that we do still maintain those sound internal controls to make sure that the situation actually improves to ultimately a clean audit for both the agency and the fund. On slide number 7, Chair, is to briefly just touch on the actual targets over the entire period for the agency. The first one talks to organizational efficiency, where we are actually going to be focusing on ensuring that, number one, we do have adequate resources within the agency, and number two, that we do focus on ensuring that the actual policies and systems that we have in place are also supporting the deliverables that we are supposed to be achieving as an organization. Talking to the business systems, as I've mentioned, the focus there is on making sure that we automate as well as integrate them, and the system rollout of the ERP will actually be a key focus area for the 16-17 financial period. The process started in the 15-16 financial year, so the key issue now is on making sure that we actually do conclude that process in terms of going live, as well as making sure that everybody actually does eventually get onto the said ERP system. In terms of availability of business systems, looking at the target of making sure that we switch over to the SAP system, it will be very key for us to make sure that we are not actually seeing a situation where the business systems are not available, and that we actually check and make sure that the newly rolled out system, which will take place in 16-17, is actually tested, people are trained adequately on it, and that is actually available at least 98.5% of the time, which means we are looking to make sure that the downtime is actually limited to the barest minimum. Moving on to slide number 8. We also are focusing on making sure that we do promote compliance throughout the agency, and that can only be achieved if we have access to sound legal advice within also reasonable time frames, so that we can not completely eliminate but reduce the risks that come with possible litigation against the agency in whatever shape or form. Then the next one is on making sure that we actually monitor and evaluate the impact. We've got projects that have been rolled out in a number of areas throughout the country. And we have realized that it is important to not only march forward in terms of continuously rolling out without looking back to see whether these projects have actually achieved the desired impact. So from the research perspective in 16-17, the focus will be on going back to the areas, specifically the six areas where we've rolled out broadband projects, to just make sure that indeed what we set out to achieve in terms of the ultimate benefit to those communities has actually been achieved, assess what challenges are actually taking place, and then compile the actual lessons that we can learn from that in order to make sure that as we move forward, we're able to improve on our project planning and rollout. So that will be the key issue on the research side, just to do those impact analysis for all those areas. On the stakeholder engagement, we do need to make sure that we are very visible, that we do actually share the successes of the agency, because if we fail to do that, it will only be the negatives that actually make headlines on a day-to-day basis. So it's very important for us to make sure that we actually make people aware, first and foremost, of who we are, what we are doing, what we have achieved, and how we will still continue to serve those underserved areas that have been identified. So that will be a key one also from the stakeholder engagement side of things. Then, Chair, I've mentioned earlier that in 14-15, we were recipients of unqualified audit opinions for both USASA and USAF. The key issue going forward now is to make sure that we continue to track on a quarterly basis our compliance with the relevant precepts, mainly the PFMA, as well as the Treasury regulations, so that if we continue to keep our pulse on that, we can make sure that we do indeed achieve a clean administration for both the agency and the fund, and actually ultimately drive towards making sure that we improve on those audit opinions to make sure that we do acquire clean audit outcomes at the end. Slide number 8, that one concludes the actual key targets for USASA. On slide number 9, we'll just briefly look at the funding outlook for the agency. We have also included the 15-16 budget allocation, which is for the previous financial year. And just to mention there that out of the 262 million that was allocated in the 15-16 financial year, only 66 million of that was actually an allocation for operational purposes, which means then there was an additional allocation that was given, which is 196 that was specifically allocated for the BDM project management and distribution costs. 146 of that was basically for the logistics side, and then the 50 million relates to the ERP project that I've mentioned earlier. Then we've also given an indication of the actual CAPEX allocation. For example, in 16-17, 1 million of the total 69 million will actually be contributing towards CAPEX, which is basically talking to IT equipment, furniture and fittings for the agency. I'm now on slide number 10, where we briefly look at the key strategic risks that have been identified in relation to the objectives that have been set for the agency. The first one that we've noted there is the adequacy of the current skill set. There is a current organizational development process that is underway within the agency, wherein there has been a realization that the skill set that we have within the agency is not adequate, especially when we look at the technical skill set that exists. Hence the process then that was undertaken to make sure that we do have an organizational development process. So the conclusion of that process within the current financial year will actually make sure that we do limit the risks that could be associated with that. There's also a risk that could talk to the system that I've mentioned, the SIP system. So the key focus there will be on making sure that we do have a change management process that is in place to make sure that all the USASA employees actually do buy in to the new SIP system that is to be rolled out in the current financial period. And then also that to make sure that there is a complete decommissioning of the legacy systems, because if the employees have an option to take an older system and utilize that, then you could be faced with possible resistance to the new system. So that decommissioning will actually mitigate that risk for the agency. And then there will also be a continuous focus on training throughout the system 17. In fact, the training aspect was actually sort of started in 15-16, just to be sure that everybody is geared towards ensuring that by the time we actually do switch over to the new system, everybody is on board and they are fully familiar with the various areas of function within that system. We've also looked at making sure that there is a business continuity plan, so that should there be a disaster, the agency is able to respond effectively. On the financial side, we do take steps and continue to take steps to make sure that those responsible for the drafting of our financials, as well as the overall financial management function, do actually stay abreast of the developments that take place, especially on the graph side of things, just to be sure that we are actually always staying ahead of the developments there and making sure that our financials do indeed actually comply fully with the graph standards that have been set. There is also communication that needs to be maintained between ourselves as well as stakeholders, on the main being the parent department, which is DTPS, just to be sure that we are actually on the same page with regards to our exact role that we need to be playing on the SA Connect rollout. So that will also continue to be a focus area in the current financial period. I've mentioned earlier on the stakeholder relations side that we are actually focusing on making sure that we actually turn any negative perceptions that are currently in existence about the agency, just to be sure that we do have continuous campaigns targeting the relevant stakeholders and making sure that we continuously are sharing the successes of the agency, just to be sure that indeed there is an awareness around that. There is also a risk that talks to inability to continue operating into the foreseeable future. That one here basically relates to the recommendations that were made by the ICT review panel. So in the current year, we do actually need to make sure that we continue to focus on making sure that we do continuously engage our principal in terms of making sure that we are fully aware of the impact of those ICT panel recommendations on our current and future operations as an organization. That one concludes, Chair, the USASA as an agency. We will now be moving on to the Universal Service and Assets Fund. I'm on slide number 12. This one was just included, basically just to give an idea of the underserved areas, which have been identified as 195. So in the 16-17 financial period, we'll actually be zooming in into two of those areas, just to make sure that we do roll out broadband projects in terms of those two areas that have been identified. On slide number 13, Chair, we provide... Yes.
To follow through, Chairperson. On slide 12, there's a map. I don't know whether it is because it's printed in black and white or... But I don't see where these 195 municipalities are located. It's not indicated there. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Even in the color picture, Chairperson, we haven't zoomed into the specific areas, but it was just to provide the committee with an idea of the number that we're driving towards, so that when we do actually get to discuss the actual use of deliverables in terms of broadband rollout, the committee can have an indication that we are targeting to against what number overall of underserved areas throughout the country.
But just to extend on that clarity, if the member would want to have the specific in terms of 195 areas, I think we can provide that.
Thank you, Deputy Chairperson. You just read my mind, because I wanted to propose that we must get the information. Thank you.
Noted, Chair. Thank you. On slide number 13, we basically look at a snap picture of the contribution of the fund from 2013-14 up to the current year. In terms of the 16-17 targets, we're actually looking at making sure that two underserviced local municipal areas, being in the OR Tambo district, of and those areas are actually King Sabata, Dalinjebo, as well as Mfonto, actually do have broadband rollout projects. On the rapid deployment and maintenance side, we will actually actually maintaining existing connectivity to 127 schools, 93 clinics, as well as 38 ICT centers. So the actual connectivity will still be maintained in the 16-17 financial period in those mentioned sites. On the right side of the presentation, it's just to touch briefly on the historical achievements of the fund. In 2013-14, we successfully concluded, initiated and concluded broadband rollouts in Amalahleni and in Mhlanga local municipal areas. In 2014-14, the targeted municipalities were Jo Morolong and Ratlo. In the 2015-16 financial year that we have just concluded, the focus was in Albert Luthuli, as well as Mutale, which are in the Gauteng district, as well as the Zambe district of Mpumalanga and Limpopo, respectively. Then, in terms of the number of schools where we've maintained connectivity, the number in 1516, sorry, it's the 127 schools, 93 clinics, and 38 ICT centers. Then also in the 15-16 financial period, the fund had a target of making sure that 3 schools for persons with disabilities actually were connected to ICT services. We've noted the 3 schools there as Pumlani in Mpumalanga, Fulufelo in Limpopo, as well as Tolo Special School in the Eastern Cape. However, in addition to the targeted 3 schools, the fund actually managed to connect, or the agency through the fund, connected an additional 3 schools. Which were basically in the Eastern Cape as well as in KZN. So that was actually an overachievement in terms of what we're actually supposed to have achieved in 15-16 on the school connectivity. Slide number 14, Chair, just lists the actual healthcare facilities that were connected to the fund in the two areas of Motale, the Motale local municipality, where 17 clinics were actually connected, as well as in Albert Luthuli, where 21 clinics were actually connected as part of the broadband rollout project. Each of the facilities were actually provided with notebooks, tablets, as well as printers. Then just to mention also in terms of the healthcare facilities, the positive side that has come out of that also is that their actual patient management systems have actually been also transferred onto the actual devices that have been promoted, which means that when they do go off-site, they're able to have access to their records as well. Moving on to slide number 15, which just briefly touches on the targeted societal impact of USAF projects. I've mentioned earlier that in 2017 we'll be doing impact assessment in 6 local municipal areas. So when we actually do those impact analysis, this is what we'll be testing to see and testing ourselves to see whether we have actually achieved what we're set out to do. In terms of the rollout of broadband services and equipment to schools, we are actually hoping to see an improvement in the quality of education through the actual introduction of the connectivity and internet services to these institutions, which means at the end of it all, we should be able to assess, for example, whether there's been a change in attendance rates, whether there's been a change in school pass rates, etc. Then also, the communities should actually be able to have an access to a better quality of healthcare services, because then the quality of service should be improved by the provisions of the devices as well as the services that have been made. There should be an enhanced awareness in terms of making sure that the communities have a better understanding of the technology as well as the services that are available. We are hoping to make sure that we contribute towards bridging the digital divide to improve access to information, which means that a person that is sitting in an underserved rural community should not be disadvantaged in terms of not being able to access the same information that someone that is sitting in Joburg is able to access. Then opportunities are created also for the communities, because when we do roll out projects, we do make sure that we hold service providers accountable in terms of making sure that there is an SMME development aspect in concluding the contractual agreements that are concluded with them. So then the job opportunities are also created there, and then there's also an opportunity for development, because then those SMMEs are also exposed to training as well as better services. There's also the economic development growth that should come with that, because the introduction to ICT will mean then that those previously underserved communities could be seen as more viable in terms of new businesses that may want to gain entry to those communities, because there is a better access to ICT services and infrastructure. I'm on slide number 16, Chair, in terms of the USAF strategy implementation plan. For the broadband rollout, we are targeting the Sonso and King Sabata Dalindyebo local municipalities, and the number there is actually aligned or is actually guided by the allocation that has been made to the fund. So in 2016-17, we will be only targeting those two areas with the 32 million that has been allocated for the specific function of making sure that we do roll out broadband. Then the maintenance of existing connections, as previously mentioned also, that will be maintained for the whole 3-year period from 2016-17 up to 2018-19. And then that will be also aligned to the available funding that is there. In terms of the digital broadcasting target, we are looking at making sure that we do continue to actually make sure that we provide set-top boxes and accessories to the needy households that have been identified, and the numbers have also been put in there, that it's 58,000 in 2016-17, increasing up to 191 for the 2018-19 financial period. On slide number 17, we look at the USAF related risks. The first one has already been addressed on the USASA side, which just talks to making sure that indeed we do have an adequate skill set. Then the other one talks to adequate funding availability for making sure that we do roll out the project, and that one will definitely require ongoing engagements between the agency, Treasury, DTPS, as well as the regulator, just to be sure that we are able to have adequate funding to make sure that we continue to do the work that has been started. A key challenge that relates to the Broadcasting Digital Migration Project is relating to the uptake levels. In 2016-17, a key challenge that was identified there was that although the set-top boxes were available, the uptake levels were not necessarily satisfactory in terms of allowing the agency to achieve the targeted numbers or to reach the targeted numbers. So then that requires ongoing communications between the agency as well as the Department of Communications, because the key challenge for us there was that the agency is not directly responsible for the community awareness programs that relate to this specific project. Then I've touched on the stakeholder perceptions one. And then the last one talks to just inability to ensure affordable connectivity of services, which then is linked to the implementation of the e-rates, so that the benefits can be reaped in terms of making sure that the relevant discounts are provided to the qualifying educational and healthcare institutions. On slide number 18, Chair, just in conclusion, it's important to mention, though, that the recommendations of the ICT Policy Review Panel that were made to the Minister will have a direct impact on the agency and its projects. And as at the time that we're actually developing the strategic plans as well as the annual performance plans for both USASA and USAS, that exact impact was not exactly clear to the agency. And then in terms of USASA, focus areas are to make sure that we do conclude the organizational development process and actually realign the agency with that organizational development process. The second one talks to the implementation of the system to make sure that indeed we are able to achieve that targeted integrated approach to business processes. The focus will continue to remain on making sure that there is indeed an improvement in governance and accountability. And as I've mentioned earlier, that we'll talk to making sure that we continuously track the level of the agency's compliance with all the relevant legislative risks, just to be sure that we are actually in full compliance. On USAF, we'll continue to focus on making sure that the communities and institutions are actually connected to broadband infrastructure. We'll continue to make sure that we do maintain the existing connections to the identified institutions that I've mentioned earlier on the USAF side. And then the implementation of the broadcasting digital migration program, although there were delays initially, the focus is on making sure that we are actually driving all energies towards ensuring that we do achieve the set targets in relation to this project as well. Budget availability is limiting currently, Chair, because I've mentioned earlier that there are 196 underserved areas, yet we are targeting only two of those in 16-17. That is in direct alignment with the financial resources that are available to the agency. So with a bigger allocation, we would then be able to have a bigger impact in terms of the communities that we're able to reach or the number of communities we can reach. Then just to also mention, when we do actually provide services or internet services to sites, be it a school, be it a clinic, or be it a government institution, we normally make sure that we actually enter into an agreement to actually ensure connectivity for a period of 24 months. After the end of that 24 months, the relevant department, for example, the Department of Education in the cases of schools, is actually supposed to make sure that they take over that role of actually making sure that they fund the continued connectivity for the specific schools. And the challenge now that we're facing as an agency is that come the end of the 24-month period that has been set, departments do not step up to the plate in terms of making sure that they take over the responsibility of paying for those costs, which then means that at times USASA is actually paying for connectivity beyond the initial 24-month period, which is a drain on the financial side, because then it means that money that should have been used to connect new sites is actually now at times directed towards maintaining existing sites, which should have been handed over to provincial departments. And then also, that just talks to that last one in terms of now the footprint that we're able to have given the resources that we have, especially negatively impacted by that. And that concludes from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Yeah. And it was very much informative. I know that we all have questions to ask, and therefore I'm going to allow the honourable members first to ask questions from the presentation or for clarity or any other issue that they want to raise. Thank you. Over to you, honourable members. Honourable Safako Kosi, and then honourable Julius. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, honourable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation and congratulations, because despite the shrinking pairs of the state. That's seeing you pushing forward. But on slide number 6, I wonder whether we have got a target maybe to measure as to how far are you in terms of maybe provinces in the connectivities of the set-top boxes in the needy individual household. As we have indicated that we are of course representing provinces, we mention is made of Ngakamudere Mulema, where you have the Ratlong and the Morolong. But I'm looking at the area of Ramoser and Yilwa local municipalities, which is stretching from Zeras to the border of Botswana next to Gaborone. You are sweeping start to Lopopum, Mushani, around that area. Whether you have perhaps already maybe reaching some of those distance areas that are in the far peripheries of the towns. There are quite a number of high schools and also individuals. Sometimes there are also, I remember last during the registrations, I was struggling with the network around that, with the MP and the border code. It will at some point say, we'll be talking of whether it's orange or what. I think that is the network in Botswana also. This encroachment, what is the relationship in between the border lines? Because we find that the citizens of Botswana might be enjoying access to some of this network. And then how do you manage that? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable. The powerful Honorable Sofosi. Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question would be on slide number 13. Like 13.13. Like I indicated earlier that I'm from Northern Cape Province. And I reside in the Johnstown Haitsewe region. I see under municipalities here, under the USAF broadband rollout project, that the municipalities mentioned here, and one of them is Jomorolo. And for my region, there's a municipality by the Jomorolo name. So before I continue with my question, I want to know if the Jomorolo is the one that is in the Northern Cape. Okay, then my question would be, what project did you have in Chomorolo in the 2014-2015? Then the second question would be, what criteria you use in awarding your tenders? I know you are very good at advertising them, but it seems you lack somehow in awarding them. So I want to know what criteria do you use, and I want an honest answer on regarding this question. If you don't know, just indicate that you don't. I don't mind waiting for the minister to come and answer on that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Forty, Honorable Julian.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you to the Department or to USASA for the presentation. However, I do think that we need a lot of presentations. A lot of presentations. This is actually one of the catalyst projects that we can have in our country to develop economically and otherwise. Given the background of South Africa, where there are so many rural areas and these people are actually out of the economic world and development if they are not connected. Now, I also want to join Honorable Sifaku in asking, how far are we in terms of provinces? Do we have something tangible to say that this is what we are going to do? Because I think somewhere it's stated in media reports, I think it's in February, where USASA said you need 100 billion to close the ICT gap in South Africa. Now my question is, where do you get this figure from? Because certainly it must be informed by information that you gathered. And I see on page slide 8, there's continuous measurement of gaps. How accurate is this? And are there any challenges in getting this information so that you can present us with this information? Maybe as a select committee we can help, or otherwise, what other measures do you think you can use? Because we do have census, we do have SSA and all that. Are you using these other sources, and what sources are you getting your information from? Do you do your own surveys and otherwise? Because it's very, very important to know where you're going. We can't just say we're going to do 5 schools and 10 municipalities this year and whatnot. We'll see where we're getting at and whatnot. We must know exactly, because the time when we are done with, in 20 years with 20 schools, there's new technology. I'm not saying we can do it overnight, but at least know where you are going, from where you are beginning. You know, what's my target in the next thing? How achievable is it? And this is why I need 100 billion. There's also a request that didn't come up in this presentation from the fund, that service providers that are currently paying 0.2% of the levy, that it be increased to 1%, because you want to use it to reduce the connection gap that we have in South Africa. I want to know, don't you trust us with this information? Because it's very critical information in your planning going forward. Very, very critical. How far is it? Do you get any rejection from service providers? How far is National Treasury helping in this fund? And what's the difference in funds in terms of the USA fund and the amount that we need to fill or to reduce the ICT gap in South Africa? And then also on another point, broadband is you said it's done to provinces, they are also having their own budgets to do it. And sometimes municipalities, if you look at Tshwane, Cape Town also has its own broadband. There was a mention of collaboration between provinces, municipalities. Can you tell us about how do you, or what did you do to actually facilitate collaboration between, because I think it should be your role to facilitate that collaboration between municipalities and provinces, where there are best practices, what material they are using for this, where are the access points and so forth, how fast it is, fast is it, because the speed of internet connectivity is what it's all about today in today's world. How far is it? How fast is it? And the collaboration between provinces. I know Tshwane's one is now almost up and running, almost 100%. I know Cape Town's one is almost done also. Do you use this to tell others, you know, other provinces or other cities and towns, what are the best practices? And then Telkom. Does Telkom still feature prominently in the rollout of broadband in South Africa? Are they your preferred service providers? And why are they the preferred service provider? Are there any other service providers that we can use for broadband rollout in South Africa? Just around that, if you do not have the answer, we can easily get it in a report or something. But what I'm saying is, Chairperson, we need a lot of presentations and reports on broadband rollout in South Africa if we need to fill this gap as soon as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. From my side also, in my view, help me if I'm not in line of the questions, but when the Minister addressed the thing of the TV licenses, the problem that occurred in the rolling out of your program. I was thinking that didn't you do, before you do all these things, identify the problems of that nature? And can you please just give us a background, a quick list, so that I can understand why, what is it? Because yesterday we were in a sitting in the NCOP, so I couldn't attend the budget speech of the minister. Just for me to understand, I know that the problems with TV licenses, but just to understand if my knowledge and the explanation is the same, if I understand about this, and why didn't you pick it up before the implementation, that there's going to be the problem. The ranking, the down ranking of you, is going to have an impact, or am I now out of order? How is our current standing of the IIU ranking, the ICU of the IIU ranking in Africa going to affect you, and what plans are in place to upgrade or improve of your ranking? I think you know five yeah? Ranking or what? Mm-hmm. So, the other thing that I want to understand is we did ask a question about the high cost, you know, of the affordability of a cost in South Africa. What are you going to do to assist and to make it cheaper? Because South Africa cost is very high. What is it? I remember there was a lack of money. There was a certain amount that was needed for extra people that to identify, to implement or to roll out these migration things. Did you manage to get the money? Do you have money to bring the other 3 million people? The needy households also in needy households. Just want to understand, you identify 3 million more households to roll out this program. Did you find the money, or how are you going to cause it the difficulty? The levy, obviously, I see that you want to go to to ask for the thing. Where is it now? What page? So 1% increase. You want to increase the levy. The levy from 0.2% to 1%. To get more funds. Do you think what is the obstacles or the problem by doing so? Will it be that there will be an increase, more increase in the broadband services provided to the needy people? Will it be an increase? Think that we are already sitting with high costs. I just want to understand. If I'm saying maybe I don't know how to express it, but you understand what I want to know. Thank you very much. Over to you, Deputy Chair. Sorry, let me just find out. Is there any other question that you need to ask? Okay. Do so that they can respond. It is a very short morning because some of us must go and prepare for other things.
No, it's a very short question, Chairperson. Thank you. I forgot to ask about the criteria as to how you also identify these schools and clinics. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Over to the department.
Thank you, Chairperson, Ms. Prince. What I'm going to propose, that I've got my colleagues there. I've got my two colleagues. I've also got people from the department. I've got also my incoming CEO, who also has a wealth of experience in this field. So if you don't mind, what's going to happen is we've not learned how to answer questions. So what we'll do, somebody will try to answer a question, somebody might extend that question, and somebody extend it. So that you get a full picture of how we actually need to run with this. Firstly, I must actually put it up. I've learned that I'm new at USASA. I started in September with my board. The other board exited 30th of August last year, and we're supposed to have worked with the chairperson, Mrs. Khadebe. She left in December, so we took over the reins after that. And that is not saying we don't have ability to answer all the questions. Luckily, I've got a wealth of experience sitting here, so we'll try our level best. But it could happen that some of the things we can't answer because we're not part of that board. We started with some of the issues. So if you don't, I'm not saying that it could happen. It might not happen. You know. So
I think what we must do here, if you cannot answer,
yes,
provide the committee in writing of the answers, so that we can now
okay.
Thank
you.
Good morning, honourable members, and welcome to the late of the good afternoon to the
afternoon, Chair. I'm here to close your meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think I'll try my best to answer some, but I'm going to ask my members, especially the acting CEO, you know, she knows some of these things to extend them better. For instance, I mean, I can't emphasize what. I'll start with the chairperson's issues. One on the TV license. You are quite right in terms of what you actually said to say. I mean, it's like doing anything. You know, you look at making sure when you do a plan, business plan, that it is mitigated and so on. But sometimes it happens. Some of these issues they get out of hand. I think yes. Well, the situation was, I was not there, but I'm sure the acting CEO will either answer it differently. You know, our organization reports to DPS, and then you've got DOC, which is charged with SABC. And the issue of TV license is actually dealt with at the SABC. And you have different leadership there and different boards. And since it's a commercial issue, the decision was supposed to have been taken by those boards to say, like it has happened now, because Mr. Mutambi intervened, and then the board actually took a resolution to say, we will draw a moratorium for all the those areas to speed up this process. It didn't happen before, so one could only assume that it was because of instability of the board at that time. And but luckily I've got a person who was sitting in that board at that time. My incoming CEO, I'm sure he's going to talk about that. Now going to another issue of the rankings, ranking by ICU. Imagine we are correct there. I'll ask the CEO to comment on that. As far as I know, we're leaders as far as at Africa Telecommunications Union, as far as implementation of the broadband, our model has actually been taken across Africa because they love our model. And then ranking problems in terms of the penetration of connectivity. How far we've dropped, I was not aware, but I heard that we've dropped, but the extent of it, I'm sure the acting CEO or incoming CEO will actually comment on that. Affordability is always an issue, and as far as but over time, with the sophistication of technology, scalability of it, it gets cheaper, and the e-rates, which was talking about, are also helping. So we see that over time helping. With BDM projects, as far as additional needy people, we've not looked at that at this stage. I know that the number is moving, apparently. It was 5.2 million when this project started. I know if one looks at the number right now, the needy people, the numbers have increased. And we were firstly targeting the 5.2 million. We actually complete that. And also we've got funding issues because the current fund that she was referring to, when it was approved, it didn't take into consideration the installation costs and installation costs and something else. And hence, we've got a funding shortfall currently. But those are issues Treasury will look at. Once the current fund is actually depleted, we need to make sure that we actually use the money that we begin with now. That is going to be convincing enough for us to get other monies. If I go back to very quickly to what Honorable Sefako asked, in terms of measurements, it's going to be dealt with by Vuyo. She'll talk about that, you know. But please, I want to actually also very nicely say to you, the SKA areas, meaning the borderline areas all over, are the ones that are priority. For instance, right now, we are going to be actually doing the STP boxes, especially DTH in those areas. It's our focus, sort of focal area. We need to do it before end of June because apparently of the deadline date that we need to reach. I'm sure acting CEO and incoming CEO will elaborate on that one. Madam Honorable Khosi, your questions around Mokhosi, sorry. I've written here, Khosi, sorry for that. Apologies. The Tomorrowland, it's one of those things that we need to make sure that when we go to areas, we do public awareness, engagement of communities, etc. For you not to be aware of what has happened there, it's quite concerning for us. But I'm going to ask my team to talk about it, how they did it that year, 2013 or 14, if they can, because probably they were not there. She's new, and she's also we'll see what to do. If we can answer that, we'll get further information and. Yes, okay.
it was rather desperate in our instance, and so that's where we lost it as a country. But we had a brilliant framework that many have copied. When we then moved and said, if the regulatory and the legal frameworks are fine, what then is the problem, and how, and what is the extent of the problem? So we then engaged the process, looking at the stats from the SSA, looking at working with CSIR, talking to the operators as well, looking at where the networks are, who has what and to what degree. And what we were finding was that there's a lot of money that has gone into infrastructure from the sector. But it is one infrastructure on top of another infrastructure in your urban areas, at best in your peri-urban areas. So we still had a population of people in our country that were not being served. There were areas where, you know, I remember when we did Emalahleni in the Eastern Cape, when we would land in East London, travel to Queenstown, you're okay connectivity-wise. The moment you have to move from Queenstown to Ladysray, you have to call. Because in between there, it's dead. So if you start taking beyond 30 minutes, somebody must come looking for you. And you can imagine the situation when it's winter, it snows in that area, and how many lives do we lose? Tractors do have to pull people out of taxis stuck in snow and so on and so forth. So it becomes a real life issue. And this is where the sector is not being honest. Because they like to talk about there's full-on connectivity, there's full-on coverage, but in fact there isn't. In this day and age, there continue to be areas in our country that are not connected, nowhere near connected. Forget about just being able to make a phone call. There are areas that don't have it. So we wanted to map out the infrastructure that is in the ground, and really from that be able to say, do we have sufficient infrastructure? If we're living in an age that we call, the way we say telecoms or electronic communications networks means broadband, do we have the infrastructure to deliver on that broadband? And in some areas we do, and in some areas we don't. Most notably, you'll see, it's unfortunate we can't project, but the map we would have loved to show you, it looks something like this. Now, where you're seeing, where you're seeing the light areas, you see how much that is. Those are your unserviced areas. Now, what does that say about the country? And when you say 195 local municipalities need attention, you're talking about over 80% of the country that needs attention in some shape or form. Some more than others, some are better. And we'll share this, these maps and the documents that we're referring to. And so what we then did with that document here was to say, what then is it going to cost to close this gap? And we looked at everything from the core network to the access network and all the way into the customer premises equipment. So what do I mean by that? The core network is typically your fiber. So your dark fibers, your silicons, and so on and so forth. Your broadband intercourse, they play in that space. And that is it's also commonly referred to as your wholesale network. So they then provision to the retail networks, which are your MTNs, your Vodacoms, and so on and so forth, who would sell to you and I. And then you then have to say from a universal perspective, Chair, having a network, does that mean people have access? No, it doesn't. You need to start thinking about how do you bring that into a school so that children can have access to it. How do you bring it into a clinic so that services can be provisioned over that network? How do you bring it into a police station and so on and so forth? And that's where what you often hear us talking about an integrated broadband approach, which for us also makes more financial sense and more business sense to say to an operator, go into a particular area, upgrade or construct a new network, and we will support by sponsoring the connectivity of a municipality or clinics or schools to use that network. It starts to make more business sense than the approach that they're using in the urban areas of a one-to-one kind of relationship with individuals. So that's the concept. So in the process of mapping these access gaps, I'm sure Chair is fine for us to, we'll be able to share those documents. Ramaseri Weaver is one of those 195 municipalities that were found to need assistance. Broadly speaking, it's in seven provinces that we found we need to give attention to varying degrees. The other two are Western Cape and Gauteng, where the market can close the gap. It's not to say there isn't a gap, but the market can close the gap in those areas. We're looking at areas where the market is unable or is not willing, for whatever reason, to close those gaps. So government has to intervene to some extent to get to the provision of ICT services in those areas. What we also did in that process is we then said, okay, if the number crunching says to close these gaps is in the region of 100 billion comprehensively, what would be the return on investment? So we were trying to put ourselves in the shoes of National Treasury, who gets this report that says, I need 100 odd billion. Obviously, the question they're going to ask is, where do you get this figure? Is there going to be a return on investment? And so we partnered with some consultants from the World Bank, and we mapped out per province the expected, on a conservative basis, economic impact that would result as a result of infrastructure being in place. And holistically, from a national point of view, conservatively speaking, what we found is that at worst you would be able to make to generate 500,000 permanent and non-permanent and temporary jobs as a result of the construction of these networks, but also as a result of spin-offs of new businesses that employ people and so on and so forth. And we've got that information per province as part of that. Then at last, what we then said was, if tomorrow Treasury says, boom, here's 100 million over however much time, what are the processes that you're going to follow? So that even when you look at the Act, the Electronic Communications Act, there is a requirement for us to develop a fund manual. So that manual that says how do you access this fund and who would qualify to access this fund, where would they qualify to apply these funds at. So that's the document that we refer to it as our turnaround strategy, because before we were just working. We didn't have, if that's what your concern is, we didn't have a bigger picture that we were driving towards. So now we painted the picture and we painted how much it was going to cost, and we've been moving with what little we've got, we've consolidated and tried to say, let's implement in Singa, Emalahleni, Northwest, etc., with what little we've got, so that we can prove the capacity to deliver, the capacity to spend, and to also prove the viability of the model that we were propagating, which is the anchor tenancy model. And I'm glad to say the Department of Telecommunications has in large part supported, because that's also the same kind of model that they're driving in terms of their NHI districts and so on and so forth. So Ramaseri Weaver is one of those, and I'm sure it would be one of the ones that would be considered once we get a reasonable tranche to roll out on a more massive basis. Honourable Mokosi, your question about what did we do in Joe Morolo, it's the model that I described. In there, we went in, or we incentivized an operator called IBEX that then changed to Gadela Telecommunications. And so they did Northwest, they did both Radco as well as Joe Morolo. For them, it was a greenfield network, so they set up a new network. Zomrolong was actually using a backhaul point of presence out of Warrington as the backhaul, and then Radco was using the DVI point of presence that was coming out of Mafikeng. But what was interesting and what we wanted to test as well with the position of those two particular municipalities was what was Galela going to do after they've been incentivized? Because there's a gap. There's a Dr. Kenneth Kaunda district in between them. So what they did was, with their own money, they then connected between Rato and connected Joe Morolo, crossing Dr. Kenneth Kaunda. And this is the Dr. Kenneth Kaunda that the minister was referring to yesterday to say they're the shining star. So what they did was to then partner with Kenneth Kaunda to Wi-Fi the entire district, and we wanted to see if that was going to happen, and we were happy to see that it happened. So basically, an incentive that was designed for two areas actually benefited about, in terms of local municipalities, I think Tenata has about five, so it actually benefited seven. So in an ideal environment, even when we're looking at what Tambo in this year, it's within the same province, and what we want to see and want to encourage though, whoever gets appointed to go in there, is for them to then take the impetus from us and spread and cover a bigger geographic area and provide services in the same way. And this is what the chairperson was referring to around collaboration, where we want to be able to go and sit with the premier and say, this is what we're going to do. What else can you bring? Because the more you aggregate government demand, the more business sense it makes. All they do is go to the bank with some forecasts and figures, and it comes there, and the bank provisions. If I can give you an example of when we did Msinga, we went in there with MTN, both Msinga and with Emalahleni in the Eastern Cape. MTN was so shocked that they were expecting to make back their money in 3 years on an LTE quality network. That same network in Joburg and Cape Town and other urban areas would take them 5 years to make back their money, purely because of the model that was used. So it's more of a corporate model than a one-to-one individual model. And so the concept has been proven. There's a general acceptance that is the ideal model to use to go into those areas. And primarily because, as you said, we don't have a license, so we cannot own a network. Our job is to facilitate and to incentivize industry to go and create economies and support economies in those particular areas. What criteria do we use in awarding the tenders? We use the normal process to when we issue our tenders. Section 90 of the Electronic Communications Act requires us to go on a competitive bidding process. And in fact, the most recently amended one is very clear that it must be PSMA-aligned processes. When we award on the basis of a least cost subsidy. So what we're saying is that he who costs us the least to go into an area is the person that we sponsor. Another way of looking at it is he who puts in the most into that area is who we go in. So if when we went with MTN, I mean, there were providers that were saying they need 100 million. But MTN was saying, well, we've got an infrastructure there, it's 2G, all we need to do is upgrade it and maybe extend it to get a bigger reach. So they, my figures, I'm corrected, but they were requesting a subsidy in the area of 20 million, which was what was affordable and what we could do. And then the rest they put in their own money because it is their infrastructure at the end of the day, yes. And how do we identify the schools and the clinics? We usually liaise with the Provincial Department of Education and the Provincial Department of Health for them to guide us. They know their schools and better than we could ever do. And so they give us, we just indicate to them, we have money to connect X number of schools. And they would guide us. Some provinces usually would want to concentrate them within a general area so for ease of monitoring purposes, but some provinces, for whatever, usually it's the social or the political dynamics in the province, will want them to be spread out a bit more. Everyone is slightly different. Honorable Julius, the need for a lot of presentations, I would agree. In fact, I think we need a workshop. So that we can go into detail and make sure you have a good contextual understanding of what we do and how far we are and, you know, what informs what we do. How far are we in getting to the sources of the determination? So this is the national strategy that I was referring to that has all of that data. You'll see when you get it that it has different categories. So it'll show what it calls the market frontier, for example, which is where when we say the market can fill the gap, the market, they can do it. But there's also a portion where it'll show you that beyond the market frontier, said, with what you call the two-axis gap, the market will not go beyond that without some sort of incentivization, and that's where we step in. And that's why the likes of Gauteng and Western Cape fell off compared to others. As usual, in those stats, you'll also see that Eastern Cape comes through as the most needy, which was to be expected, and the likes of Free State and other provinces as well. On the 1% levy request, what's happening and how is the Treasury helping in this regard? The 1% levy request is a rather tricky one in the sense that we have to work hand in glove with ICASA for that to happen. And it's actually an ICASA process, but ICASA relies on our research to determine whether there's a reasonable basis to make that request. And to that end, we have been in touch with ICASA over the last financial year, and we've provided them with the same information that I'm talking to you about now with respect to the national strategy. And we tentatively agreed, our perspective was that it needs to increase in some shape or form. It can be either one-off immediately, or it can be incremental. But the reality, the fact of the matter is that it needs to increase. Failing which, it means Treasury must find those funds somewhere. Now, Treasury has indicated its constraints, as we all know. But what they have said was that they would gladly support the process if ICASA can just proceed with that. I do think to the defense of ICASA, they have been hampered a little bit. I think that process will pick up, Chair, now that there's new councillors and you've got quorums and so on and so forth. I think we're going to see that process picking up. But they've been very accommodating in terms of hearing us out and looking at going through the figures, going through the gaps. And we agree there's a problem that we need to address. If we don't, the NDP is actually at risk. You asked about collaboration. I've touched on the matter of collaboration. What we have done in the past was to approach provinces and more specifically the provincial departments of education. And with the constraints that we have, what we said to them was, look, can you look at, for example, your budget for textbooks? What if you apportion some of that budget towards connectivity, and we will either do it for you or we'll come in and assist from an advisory or project management point of view so that you connect the schools. The thinking there was that you've already got e-books. So what you'd be spending on your physical hard copy books, you can simply spend on connectivity, and then the books are downloaded. Now, we had gone quite far with a few provinces. For example, what Gauteng is doing now, we supported them in their pilot phase when NEC Banyaza was first starting out. So they are now flying with their own money. And this is the same approach that we're trying to say. We're asking that education view ICT infrastructure just like any other infrastructure when they build their schools or when they renovate and refurbish their schools. It's a critical component. What we've also been adamant about is that we cannot provision for learners and forget the teachers. Otherwise, we create a tension that in some cases is not healthy. We've touched base with a few varsities, these in particular, to also say to them, in your curriculum, the question was actually, are you now graduating teachers that are teaching for the 21st and the 22nd century? And we actually found they were not. ICT was not an integral part of their pedagogy. And so what we've done is to say, can you please start looking at it? Because we cannot be pushing in resources into the system that are not prepared
for the current scenario. Otherwise, we're still producing children of the 1980s, and that is by no means an advantage to this country or to those children at all. So those have been well received. How long it will take for that, for those changes to happen is another question altogether, but at least the conversation is happening. Just the last one on the issue of collaboration. There's also been a little bit of a pause, if I can call it that, with respect to finalizing these collaborative arrangements as a result of the institution of Operation Pakisa for ICT in education. So the perspective from the provinces was that let's just wait for the Pakisa report, and then at least we would know how to conclude, which I don't think is terribly wrong, because then you have a national perspective or a national approach on how to do things that is then filtered through into the province. But Pakisa was looking at the whole kit and caboodle, from administrative systems all the way to learning material, but also to teacher development as well. So I think it's going to be a very comprehensive report that will guide all of us on how to deal with education. Telkom, does it feature prominently in the rollout of broadband? Are they your preferred provider? Chair, I indicated earlier that we are governed by the Electronic Communications Act on how we manage the fund. And it's very clear that we have to go out on a competitive bidding process, and it must be PSMA aligned. So any broadband project that we undertake has to undergo that process. To date, we have not awarded to Telkom because we have not received a submission from Telkom. And unfortunately, that's the only way we can deal with it. Until that provision is repealed or we are directed otherwise, we must comply with the Act in that respect. There are other entities that provide various services in terms of broadband, such as your broadband InfraCo. That's who we typically use from an infrastructure point of view. But there are others. Neotel also provides connectivity on a wholesale basis. You've got your dark fibers. There's a plethora. Seacom is now moving from the periphery of our country. They're moving inland as well. So there's quite a bit of competition on the core network side. But we'll be guided on by the department as well on how the bigger SA Connect implementation is going to be rolled out. Chair, you had a question to say or to explain the history of the TV licenses and why did we not foresee it. Chair, this one I think is a slightly tricky one in the sense that a TV license is a legislated requirement. And I think the Minister of Communications has for a while been in conversation with the SABC to find ways around it. And I know the principal challenge was always this legal, the fact that it's law. It's not a choice. Where we sit as USASA, and knowing what we know from working on the ground, we did support the request not for it not to be there, but we do understand that there was a process to be followed. So it's not that it wasn't foreseen. I think it's just that the process took a little bit longer to be resolved, and I think that's also why Minister wanted us to stay in the Northern Cape, so that we can make sure that we're done with all the gremlins in the system. Because you can imagine if we rolled out nationally, it would have been an absolute nightmare just as a consequence of this one particular aspect. Since we actually got a report from SAPO about 2 days ago where they indicated that since the announcement and the publicity around the repealing of the TV license, they've seen an increase in the uptake, which we expect that will create an impetus for people to go in and check on that.
And I think just a comment on it. I don't know whether I was right. When they introduced the thing, if someone is not an expert on it, I was saying to myself, maybe it's
a kind of director to get your TV license. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the income, to increase the income. That's what was my thought, because I explained to my son, he's an IT manager in one of the municipalities. So I asked him about five, you know, the unknowns, and he explained to me what is this thing and everything is about, how, you know, to fast track certain things and what, and he explained to me a lot of things. Maybe also other things that I need to come and ask questions on, but nevertheless. And then I asked him, I wonder, what are you doing now, going to assist us for the people and to pay their TV license, because I know there is a gray area in this field.
Sorry for that. Just on a lighter note, I don't think we need to be coerced to pay TV license. Mm-hmm. I think we must pay TV license.
Yeah, I know, but
it's a right thing to do.
It's a right thing to do, Honorable Julius, but you know the background of our... I'm working, you know, with the community, and I understand. You know, sometimes when they speak, they say, well, visiting the houses, you will... I can tell you stories, but nevertheless, it's
Venture, you asked about our rankings in Africa. Our rankings have suffered in the last couple of years. And even when we're doing the national strategy, we actually noted that. What effect does it have on us? I think as you said, not a significant effect, but as a country, it does affect. It's going to affect you, the attractiveness of the country for investment, for example, the attractiveness of the country for educational purposes and so on and so forth. And then, of course, if you consider that you may want to, at some point, retire to a farm or to the rural areas for whatever reason, now you're going to be sitting in the dark because your preference is out there. But also, all of us are Africans, you know, we have our aunts and whatnot that we must see before they die, and when they die we must go pay our respects and so on and so forth. So we ourselves living in the cities now are not born in the cities. We have homes somewhere and we go there, and we should be able to communicate just as we're communicating here. Other than the fact that those children in those areas, those human beings in those areas, have the exact same rights that we have sitting here in the cities. So yes, it does affect us from a socio-political point of view, but also from an FDI point of view. I think it will have an impact on us. On the question of cost to communicate, this is an ICASA. This is a regulatory one. It's a little tricky in the sense that data is not regulated by ICASA. So even when we talk about e-rate and we talk about 50%, we literally have to go on the word of what the operator says. So if he says my connection costs 1,000 rand, you just calculate that it's 500 that you're going to pay. But for all you know, the true cost of that connection could actually be 500 rand. That's the first aspect. But what we're doing with promoting, even within the broadband project, promoting the smaller SMMEs, is to bring competition into the picture. There are instances in rolling out these projects where we have felt that there's a little bit of collusion happening. I'll give you an example. In Limpopo, when we were rolling out Mutale, the service provider that we've appointed there is a little-known licensee called Mungalo. He goes somewhere, he sees the tower, Vodacom or whoever it belongs to, and requests to share the tower. The cost he's given to share that tower supersedes the cost he would incur to erect his own tower. So what you'll find there is you'll find the tower from the main big operator and from Mungalo. And you're going to ask the question why, but that's exactly why.
it made no financial sense, no business sense for him to go and rent space on that tower when he can just erect his own at a cheaper rate. Those are the things that start to make you think there is something untoward is going on here. Now, if you take that, those kinds of experiences, and you come to the question of the cost to communicate, if you can go to Malawi and you can access free Wi-Fi or hotspots in Malawi, what's happening here that the cost is so exorbitant?
Don't you think we allow these people from other countries to come here and make money? I think that's how I see it, because it's the other Vodacoms and the whatever, they build the infrastructure, we don't have infrastructure. Now we have to pay to use their infrastructure in our country. And our people are suffering, they must pay. So I don't know whether I'm correct. I'm saying this. And it's about time, because my other question is, did you go to those people to ask them to help us, to contribute part of their social responsibility, giving back to the South African people? They use their land to build those infrastructures. They have to give back something so that we can be able to start building our own infrastructure. I expect you to have that kind of, interaction with those people. Thank you.
Chair, I don't think you're raising anything untoward in that respect. It's just the challenge is that the relationship belongs to ICASA. So we agitate from our side, we agitate with ICASA in the hope that they will then enforce some of those things. A simple example is that in some countries, the masts are owned by government or by a single company, and then every operator just clamps on them. So you don't have this proliferation of all sorts of infrastructure all over the place. And it's not to say there are no infrastructure sharing regulations here. There are infrastructure sharing regulations, but are they enforced is the thing. And that is an ICASA mandate. So, before we never really, we had a very arm's length relationship with ICASA. We're building on it. It's improving now. And I think we should see better synergies in future, Chair. Yes, just two more. There was a question around the funding deficit. Do we have the money for DTT? No, we still only have the money that was allocated in 2008, Chair. But Treasury's indication was that show us you can spend first, and then we can talk. Yes. And then on the 1% levy, what is the obstacle here? It's like I indicated, it's a joint effort between ICASA and USASA. But to change the regulation, I think if I recall, in that regulation it's about a paragraph for us to change. But the process is the one that takes longer. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much for that information.
Sorry, Chair, to interrupt. I was wondering if my incoming CEO wants you to say one or two words before you go.
No, then we can allow him.
Thanks, Chair. I think the acting CEO has covered most of the ground. Suffice to just say, what has been a difficult in terms of the uncapping for years has been the absence of a strategy and a plan. And where we are now, there is a clear strategy, including SA Connect, broadband strategy. So it's a question of translating that into an implementation plan. That can therefore assist ICASA to engage with the industry and come up with then a regulation that will make sense. And lastly, on the license fee question, it's clearly a legal matter, and even the announcements made they have to be processed in terms of the law. Prior to that, we will still have the challenge. The other question, Honourable Member, you asked, you may not see our project because they are not the like the youth hub in the that was lost yesterday. They are the kind of projects where you build in infrastructure, which could be either in the form of the sites or whatever is built underground or undersea cabling, etc. But you see it when if somebody was to steal cables in that area. There's an area in the Eastern Cape just this week where people are complaining and they've taken it for granted for a number of years that they are connected, and only to find that criminals went and took the cables in the sites that are built in that rural area. It's a deep rural area. And now people cannot speak to their family, cannot go online, etc. It's only then when you begin to see, oh, this is the work that we've been benefiting from for years and we took for granted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is it. I am going to this meeting. It's adjourned. But I have a question, ma'am, but I'm looking at Julius. The Honourable Julius is so in a hurry that I don't want to, but the question, the last question, really before I'm leaving, is just the thing about a Gmail. I've been told that there is a Gmail South African thing that we can use. I changed my address, or word address, to Gmail, so that I know there is confidentiality of my communication. So my question was, is a trustable South African networking, and what is it called? I know that someone told me, but I had all the questions. Maybe the answer for another. But maybe you can tell me.
Do you know about me?
You are right. There's an institution, a small institution that is charged with those type of things. It's called ZA. That's it.
Thank you very much. So we ask you all South Africans to change to that network, mate. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Thank you to the department for your presentation and the answers. And thank you that you really take us through and tell us the whole story, not hiding anything. And I do understand acting chairperson is difficult. This is councils, BTTs, we are BTTs, they are. We don't understand sometimes, but thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned. And thank you. Yes, thank you, my darling. I did welcome. We cannot approve it now, ma'am. Can we? We can approve it. Thank you. That's what I'm saying. I was looking at this. We already discussed it. Thank you, Honourable Julius. Thank you.
So because of vegetarian, I'm going to go to the hospital.
I'm not going to do that.